This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Fort Myers' premier fashion event, Art Walks the Runway, returns to the Sydney and Burn Davis Arts Center. The event starts tomorrow and will feature both local and international fashion designers. We'll get a preview of the event and we'll meet two of the industry's leading couture designers, Usama Ishtay and Michael No, who have designed for scores of top celebrities and performers, including Lady Gaga, Ariana Grande, Tyra Banks, Carrie Underwood, Mariah Carey, Nicki Minaj, and many, many more. But first, Sarasota's newest community theater company, the Gulf Front Players, is preparing to deliver its first public performance. This Sunday, May 19th, marks their performance of the A.R. Gurney play Love Letters, which was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize for Drama. The performance takes place at the Sarasota Classic Car Museum at 4 o'clock. The play, performed by just two actors, explores the romantically underscored relationship of two people through a half century of written correspondences. Aside from regular public performances, the Gulf Front Players has formed with a unique outreach mission. Proceeds from public plays are put towards bringing their performances to other, perhaps underserved audiences, senior centers, assisted living and skilled nursing facilities, and for other community, social, and fraternal groups. Joining me now is the director and one of the co-stars of this production of Love Letters, Michael Marcello. This performance marks his return to the stage after an absence, but Marcello has starred in numerous plays and musicals, and he's directed more than 80 stage productions, in addition to voice work on a number of national television and radio advertising campaigns. Michael Marcello, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
We're also on the line with the Gulf Front Players founder and managing director, Nairn Gillette. He's a producer, designer, and director who is also returning to the theater after a bit of an absence. He directed his first community theater production at the age of just 14, and he's also taken part in numerous stage productions that have toured nationally. In New York, he ran an off-Broadway theater, producing just about everything ever written for the stage by Agatha Christie. Thanks for taking the time to be with us, Nairn. Great to speak with you.
Thank you, John. It's good to be here.
And as always, I invite listeners to join the conversation. The number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. And Nairn, I wanted to begin with a broader look at this new theater company. As the founder, what motivated you to take on the challenge of starting a brand new community theater group? And do you feel like it was a niche in the theater world in the Sarasota area that maybe just wasn't being filled?
Challenge is a good word for it. yeah, as you said in the introduction, I did my first community theater production when I was 14, and I have done them on and off, had done them on and off, for about 30 years between community theater, professional theater, off-Broadway theater, summer stock, that sort of thing, and have not been doing it for quite a while. And I have actually missed it with every single breath I've drawn over a number of years. And I decided that it was time to get back into the field, as it were. So I thought, I mean, Sarasota is an awfully big town, culturally speaking, and has a number of long-established community and professional theaters here. But I thought we might be able to form a smaller, more intimate group of people that would be able to both sing and dance, hopefully, and do straight plays, and do them for the public as a way to generate funds for the company, along with, hopefully, contributions, as we are a 501c3 nonprofit. And then take those funds and use them to move the shows in either a full production or slightly cut-down production to, as you said before, nursing homes, skilled nursing facilities, assisted living facilities, senior centers, and the fraternal and civic organizations. That is something that I had done in my 20s and 30s with another group that I was involved with in my hometown of Baltimore, and it was very well received by the audiences because they couldn't get to us, so we would go to them, and that's sort of what I'm doing here.
And you mentioned it's a 501c3 nonprofit. Why did you want to go that route? Is that advantageous for the mission that you have?
I believe it will be. I believe that people, once they know of us a little bit more and see what we're going to do, will be more willing to make donations to help fund it. Also, it has advantages tax-wise so that we don't have to worry about a few things that some of the more commercial theaters have to worry about.
And it looks like currently you've got kind of a small core staff. Do you expect to grow that over time?
I do indeed. We have a board of directors. At the moment, the number is five. of which Michael is one, and we are on the lookout for about another three more people initially, three or four more people to form the board and go forward. I'm hoping, we can't obviously announce what shows we're going to be doing until we actually secure the rights to do them, and we can't secure the rights until we have the venue. So we're sort of nomadic at this point, so once we know all of that and can line up, we can go forward with what we're going to be doing for the rest of the season. But I'm hoping that it will be a seven-character Noel Coward comedy, and the other will be an historical musical.
So long term, you are looking to maybe eventually establish kind of a permanent performance venue, but for the time being, it seems like there might be some advantages to being able to, you know, take these productions on the road.
Precisely right.
Okay, all right. And I guess you talked a little bit about it, but what's the scope or the nature of the productions that you'll be choosing to put on? Are these primarily like well-known, well-established plays and musicals? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not going to be experimental or cutting edge new things. We're going to do things that are well-known. This is, to put it nicely, as you know, of course, as is your area, this is an older community, mm-hmm. and I think there are an awful lot of plays out there that people remember fondly that they haven't seen in a while, plays and musicals as well as operettas that they haven't seen in a while and would like to see again.
And as we both mentioned earlier, your work in stage production began at a very young age. But then in recent years, you had taken a bit of a break from the theater, and you've expressed how that kind of pained you. I'm curious about what prompted you to kind of have that period of separation and why you've gotten back into it now.
The last thing I did in the theater was run an off Broadway theater in New York from 1982 to 1987. I then got a job for a company that was a touring company of a show that was based out of Sarasota and moved here to take that job. It fell apart shortly thereafter, and I didn't feel like moving back to New York at that point, so I looked around for something else to do, but there wasn't a lot to do in theater. I had attempted to volunteer with one of the community theater groups here in town, but I went up to someone after the show and said, I'd like to volunteer. Who do I talk to? And they told me that they didn't have time to talk to me now because they were in the middle of getting ready for a photo shoot, and could I please come back some other time? And I thought to myself, well, if that's how they treat a potential volunteer, how do they treat their actual volunteers?
Right.
And didn't pursue that any further. And ended up selling advertising for a number of years, working with both the American Advertising Federation and the local chapter here, the Suncoast Advertising Federation, as well as the one you have had down there, which will be starting up again shortly. And spent about 25 years doing that. And the only participation as a theater person was as an audience member. And as I said before, I missed it dearly and wanted to get back into it and thought this might be the way to do so.
All right. And, you know, one of the things I love about this concept that, and we've mentioned it, is this outreach mission that you have, you know, bringing these performances to folks in assisted living facilities who just maybe don't have the opportunity to get out to some of these established venues and see shows. And I was kind of chuckling to myself, remembering in elementary school being in a musical theater production that they brought to a nursing home. And I guess we could just chalk it up to Alzheimer's, but we were actually like booed off the stage by the residents. And maybe it was a good learning experience for young performers, but I was thinking about it in retrospect and just truly how dreadful it was and how nobody should have had to see that unless they were a parent or a grandparent of one of the kids in it. But that often that's kind of all folks who live in those kind of conditions have access to. I mean, are you really looking to kind of raise the quality of stage shows that, you know, folks living in these conditions can see, that they, you know, still deserve to see rich cultural productions?
I hope to do that. I don't think that, I mean, obviously you referred to some people with Alzheimer's, and then I'm not sure that would be an ideal audience.
Right.
But I think that other challenged individuals and or senior centers, we have, for example, here in Sarasota, and I think possibly down there as well, there's a senior friendship center that brings in entertainment from time to time. There's also a number of retirement communities, both here and in your area, as well as assisted living facilities where people are perhaps more mentally acute than they have more mental acuity, but physically challenged and can't get to us. So we would go to them in the hopes that they would understand, appreciate, enjoy, and remember seeing something from their past.
Right. And I wanted to turn a little bit to Love Letters. This seems like an advantageous first production, given that the show includes just two actors, and there's not very much in the way of you know, set design there, so it can easily travel to different venues. Was that kind of a practical consideration you were taking into account when saying, what are we going to start with?
It was indeed. It is, as you said, it's a minimal set. It's basically two actors, as I'm sure Michael will tell you, two actors sharing their letters that they've written to each other over the course of a 50-year relationship, and I don't want to give away how it ends because it is kind of a twist. But it's a small cast, it's a small set, it's basically a table and two chairs and some books and book stands and a couple of scripts because they're actually reading. It requires very little memorization, except a lot of acting ability and. It's all done, in this case, it's all done with their facial expressions and their tone of voice.
Yeah.
And some hand gestures, perhaps. But it's they don't interact with each other at all until the very end of the show.
Okay. Well, I'm going to delve into this with Michael in just a moment. But before that, I also wanted to mention the timing of this first production. I just found it interesting because this is typically the time of year when a theater company kind of starts winding down its season. But you're starting this brand new show. Was that an intentional decision or did the timing just kind of work out that way?
It kind of worked out that way. Our original intention was to do it during quote-unquote season. And I had been told by the rights holders that originally told by them that they're getting the rights to do it would be no problem at any time until I actually applied for those rights and was told that some professional theater in my area had expressed an interest in doing the show and therefore the rights weren't available. Well, whatever that professional theater was never did the show, and they suggested that I reapply in February, which I did, and I couldn't do much until we got the rights, so I needed some lead time, so that's why I picked May, but I would have preferred to have done it earlier.
Right. And you mentioned earlier some plans for specific future shows. Do you intend to continue performing throughout the summer, or are things maybe going to pick up again in the fall?
I think we're going to probably be spending the summer building staff and building people. If the opportunity presents a show, I mean, this summer, we would certainly do so, although I don't know that we will. But I think that going forward, it would be a year-round operation because the audience that we hope to serve, the ultimate audience that we hope to serve, is not a touristy audience. It's sort of fixed here.
Gotcha. We're speaking with the founder of the Sarasota area's newest theater company, the Gulf Front Players, Nairn Gillette, as well as Michael Marcello, the director and co-star of their first production, Love Letters, which is going to take place this Sunday afternoon at 4 at the Sarasota Classic Car Museum. And as a reminder, listeners are welcome to join the conversation with your comments and questions. Phone lines are open at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. And Michael Marcello, thanks for sitting by, patiently waiting here. I'd love to bring you into the conversation. I found it really interesting finding out about this play and that the playwright A.R. Gurney initially intended this to be a book, submitted it to the New Yorker, and their rejection letter said that they don't publish plays. So it kind of seems like it was destined to be a play no matter what. We had talked a moment ago with Nairn about, you know, kind of the simple staging, how you're really not necessarily supposed to memorize your lines. You're supposed to be reading from the letters. Does that kind of put more of a burden on the actors and their ability, or are there some advantages to that as well?
Well, the big advantage, of course, John, is that you don't have to memorize lines, and you don't have to worry about blocking stage movement.
Mm-hmm.
So from that perspective, it is somewhat less arduous. However, it would be interesting to see how this thing would perform in an open forum with actual stage movement at some time. But the director has specifically, so the writer should say, has specifically said it works better as a reading to people sitting at a table, just not even looking at one another until the very last scene. But it does allow us an opportunity to emote. It allows us an opportunity to not worry about, you know, going up in lines.
Right.
And it's kind of a comfortable setting, actually. It's a lovely play. It really is. And above the many things that it emphasizes is people don't communicate using letters anymore, particularly in this fast fast-paced technological age. This goes way back. It begins, I think, in 1937 when they're in school. And they begin this communicating exercise. She's opposed to it. He loves it. He is involved and enthralled with writing. It's one of his great passions in life. She, on the other hand, is not. But this romance continues, and it continues over the years using paper and pen and emotions that you don't very often hear expressed in life today. You know, life goes by on a daily basis. People say their niceties, but they don't really get into the nitty-gritty of how they feel and write it down. And I think sometimes if, for example, we were to write down some of the things we said during the day, we would never have said them. So
right.
It's an interesting concept. It's really something that you easily fall in love with. It's a challenge. It's a challenge because people are sitting there looking at you and you're looking at them. There's no movement. They have to be totally engrossed in the word. And that's a challenge for audiences, too, because when you take away the activity of movement that doesn't associate with any of the lines, it becomes even more burdensome for the audience because the audience is used to being stimulated by action. And in this particular situation, they're not. They're forced to zero in on the words.
You know, I love that you say that. That's something that I've lamented for some time. Like, I love watching, like, older films from, you know, Hollywood's golden age, because it was always the dialogue that drove the story forward. You couldn't rely on a Michael Bay explosion to carry the plot.
Right. Yeah, people go looking for the different kind of excitement today. They forget about the written word or the spoken word and how beautiful it can be. We don't communicate that way anymore. We communicate with, you know, think about the video games. Think about people going to the movies and seeing Avenger and those kinds of things. I'm not trying to minimize their importance in today's society. It's what we have become. It is a viable entertainment a medium. But by the same token, it all began with the spoken word. That's where stories begin, and that's where stories end. And that's what A.R. Gurney does. He puts people in touch with the spoken word and the fact that these people are sitting down writing it, a lost art in and of itself, writing.
Do you think, and I guess I'm kind of asking you to sort of project yourself into the mind of the character you're playing, but the fact that they're writing letters and the fact that they aren't physically together or interacting as you know, don't make eye contact with each other throughout almost the entire production, do you think that the characters are being perhaps more honest than they are with people in their day-to-day lives because it is someone they're not directly interacting with? It is someone they're writing letters to.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of artistic license, I think, that comes with emotion. And it allows you to dwell in it on your own. And I think that's part of what's taking place here, the interaction between these two people. Even though they're not making eye contact, they're feeling the emotion that each one is hoping and trying to share with one another. It's really an interesting experience. It's fascinating to me because how you convey this is so, so vitally important. You have to latch on to every word. You have to embellish every word. And with that word comes even an instantaneous change of the emotion. And letters, you know, when we say things, we can take them back. Some people, you know, not everybody's running around with a recorder and they say, well, I got to go play that back and I'm going to tell you exactly what you said and you won't like it. But when you write them down, and this is even pointed out in the play, when you write things down, you have it forever and ever. It's like a book. It's like a script. And, you know, we all have had experiences in our family where people, mother, father, granddaughter, whoever, writes letters down and they wrap them up. And after they pass on, people go and they clean out their homes and the souvenirs that they left behind. And there among them is this stack of letters that are wrapped with a ribbon or something. And the ribbon is an association of how dear and near it was to this person while they lived that they received this communication. Words that you say, you know, we say in a very hostile situation, we say, take that back.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if it's written down, you got to think about what you're writing, because when you write something down, you don't want to take it back. right. because it comes from the heart. That's what I believe.
Yeah. And this play has been performed by a rather impressive roster of established actors over the years, including Sigourney Weaver and Jeff Daniels, Laura Linney and Stephen Weber, Charlton Heston, Elizabeth Taylor and James Earl Jones.
Did you say Charlton Heston?
Yeah.
Did Moses do this?
Yeah,
Moses
yeah.
Really did love letters?
Yeah. Carol Burnett.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Candace Bergen,
Carol
Angelica
Burnett
Houston.
And Brian Dennehy,
yep. Yeah, yeah. What do you think makes this play in particular so attractive to actors? Why do so many people want to do this?
Well, you don't have to memorize, number one. It's very easy to just walk into, and it's a challenge. It's a challenge for you to sit down and take a script and pull it apart and give it your own interpretation and to do it on the spot. In other words, everybody's challenged by performance, but this one in particular is, look, I'm reading this now, but wait a minute. As I'm reading this, I'm seeing something new here. I'm hearing something new in another voice, which can really happen in any situation. But it's particularly important when you're looking at the written word. You know, just the twist of a word, the turn of a phrase, any of those things. And they change from day to day. And they change from performance to performance. And they change from rehearsal to rehearsal. That's what we're discovering. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes the piece exciting. It has a life of its own. And even though we rehearse it and we get it up to its best level of performance, when we actually do it, it will change again. And that's the excitement of the theater.
Yeah.
It's live. It's in the moment.
Tell me about working with your co-star in this production, Nikki Marinelli. Because I think it's interesting because you're co-starring with her, but also the director. But to me, I'm picturing like, she could be taking into account your directorial feedback, and likewise, you could be taking into account hers. It almost seems like the directing itself would be kind of an organic process, given that you're a director and a co-star.
Well, I think you hit it on the head, John, because it is an organic process. It's kind of something that evolves. Directing is never a one-sided situation. It's never, you know, I would like it done this way, you're going to do it this way, and so on. It's a collaborative effort. And that's the way Nikki and I are approaching it. You know, I'll give her something, and she'll give me something, and back and forth, and back and forth. And that's the way it will go until such time as we actually do the performance. And even then, it's like any performance. You know, you feel good about certain performances, but when you do like 8 shows a week for 24 weeks, for example, which you do when you sometimes on a tour, you know, some you feel really good about, others you don't. But all along the line, there's a give and take. An actor will come to another actor and say, you know, that scene that we did last night, I didn't think it played as tightly as it could. What do we do wrong? How can we improve that for the following night? And so on down the line. And that's what we're doing here. This is a process of refining, honing, taking these words and making them our own and doing the best that we can to help one another succeed. So I may have the title of director, but actually we share that responsibility.
Yeah. And like Nairn, I mentioned at the beginning of the conversation, this production marks kind of a return to the theater for you. What prompted you to pick it back up now?
Nairn. It's interesting. I, you know, he just came to me with this idea, and I fell in love with it. I thought, yeah, this is something kind of a noble cause, if you will, because some of these people, the shut-ins, the people in the nursing homes, people in the retirement centers, not often get out. If you can bring something to them in their own environment that they can relate to and you can pick up their day, that's fine. I do a lot of volunteering. In fact, I'm at a nursing home right now as I'm doing this interview.
Oh.
I'm getting ready to go in about 15 minutes to do a reading. I do I read to the residents several times a week, and I volunteer here. And I know how important that is and how that really is essential to making their day something other than just a mundane experience.
Yeah.
And they look forward to these kinds of visits. And to bring something like this to them, To me, I think, hey, I'm in. Let's see what we can do with this thing. So that's how I got involved. I've been out. I have not been on the stage in 15 years. I was the artistic director of Theater Works, which is now defunct, in not because of me, in Sarasota for a number of years. And I've been performing around the nation and doing television and radio, everything from Law and Order down. Everybody's been on Law and Order, so that's no doobie. That's
well, I haven't.
But every actor's been on Law and Order. But, you know, any of those things. So, but what I'm saying is it, the excitement of bringing something new with this particular, what's the word I'm looking for? This particular motivation at this particular time to serve this community seemed impressive to me. And I haven't been on the stage in 15 years.
Yeah.
Last show I did was the Sunshine Boys. I was 12 at the time.
Wow. Well, and I understand your past includes productions with, you know, such names as Ginger Rogers, Loretta Young, Dustin Hoffman. Is there a story or two there you could share with us?
Yeah, there is, actually. I got to be honest with you. The thing, a couple of stories there. Ginger Rogers, I love Ginger Rogers. And my friend, I have a friend who's an actor who was in Hello, Dolly with her when she's on Broadway, and he hates her. But I loved her. And, of course, I was very young in my career. I was only 17 years old when I did Annie Gets Your Gun. And during a production of Annie Gets Your Gun, Ginger Rogers was supposed to shoot in the air while she's riding a bicycle around. This is Theater in the Round. And Ginger came a little too close to the edge of the stage, and she fell into the orchestra pit on the bicycle. Well, the show stopped, and she got up from the timpani, or wherever she had fallen, I can't remember at the time, and they brought her into the dressing room, and the show waited and waited and waited. And I remember that they were looking for a doctor, and I didn't know at that particular time she was a Christian Scientist. That's how I found out. And she said, no, I do not want a doctor. Please get me a Christian Science practitioner to come and to pray. And that's what the theater did. And within 15 minutes of that, she was back up on the stage to resounding applause and going through it again. But she was one of the nicest ladies I'd ever met in my entire life. Also, Loretta Young. Dustin Hoffman was early in his career. He and I were auditioning together.
Wow.
And that's an interesting story. Dustin was always kind of a kooky kind of guy, but intense. You know, and again, my experience with him was not on a performance basis. It was just going out on auditions and seeing him and knowing him. Gordon McRae, I worked with in Oklahoma. And the one thing I remember about him is his kids. He had his two little kids. Heather was one of them, and I forget what the other one's name was. But his wife, Sheila, this is before she got involved in The Honeymooners, his wife, Sheila, was backstage with the girls, and I remember she was standing there, and I was standing next to them just ready to make an entrance, and they were looking at Dad, and Dad was singing his heart out, and Sheila looked at them, and she said, I want you to never forget that what your father is doing is not play, that is hard work. And I thought, okay, Mom.
Yeah.
So it's kind of little things like that come to mind.
Oh, excellent. And Naren, a final question for you. Your bio mentions previously running that off Broadway theater, producing nearly all of Agatha Christie's stage productions. What do you think accounts for your fascination with or appreciation for the works of Dame Agatha Marie Clarissa Christie?
You've done your research.
Oh, you got it all.
I hope so.
Let me tell you a little bit about the theater, the off Broadway theater itself. It was what was known as a showcase theater. It's 99 seats, and it operated under an Actors Equity showcase contract, which is primarily designed so that unknown actors can be in productions to be exposed to casting directors and agents. Unknown authors and playwrights can be exposed to an audience and that sort of thing. But it's not carved in stone that that's what a showcase has to be. There's nothing that says a showcase can't be a known production with unknown actors or with known actors. So I decided if I was going to do this, I might as well make money doing it. And I looked around, and I think the first play we did was Mousetrap, and we sold out every single performance. which allowed us to pay the actors more than Equity Scale, which Actors Equity adored. And then I thought, well, let's do another one. And I think we did The Unexpected Guest was the second one. And sold that out every single performance. And then just went on from there. And Equity loved me at the time because we were probably the only showcase company in town paying more than Scale.
Wow. Well, thanks so much for those stories and that background there. And that is unfortunately all the time we have for this portion of the show. But I want to thank my guest, Naren Gillette. He's the founder and managing director for Sarasota's newest theater company, the Gulffront Players. Naren, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
We've also been speaking with the director and co-star of this new community theater company's first production of A.R. Gurney's Love Letters, Michael Marcello. Thanks so much for your time today as well, Michael. Love the stories.
Thank you, John. Enjoy speaking with you.
The Gulffront Players' first production of Love Letters takes place this coming Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock at the Sarasota Classic Car Museum. For more information or to purchase your tickets, visit gulffrontplayers.org. We're taking a short break, but when we return, couture fashion takes center stage at the Sydney and Byrne Davis Arts Center this weekend during the 8th annual Art Walks the Runway. We'll get a preview of this multi-evening event and everything it has to offer, and we'll also meet one of the fashion industry's leading designers whose collections will be featured, Usama Ishtay. That's just ahead. I'm John Davis, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.